This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:34 in the morning on BFM 89.9's Morning Run. I'm Khoo Sejong with Philip C. Okay, so moving on to the fact that Australia, Canada and the UK have joined the US in boycotting the Winter Olympics in Beijing, which is scheduled to be held basically in February 2022. The White House said the Biden administration will not send any diplomatic or official representation to the Winter Olympics in Beijing and the Paralympic Games, given China's ongoing human rights abuses.
Now, leaders of all countries insist that their athletes will not be affected and can still compete in the Games. The last time a diplomatic boycott took place in the sporting world was back in 1980. The US had barred its athletes from competing in Moscow and led a 65-nation boycott to protest the then Soviet Union's invasion of Afghanistan. 4 years later, the USSR and its allies shunned the 1984 Olympic Games in Los Angeles in retaliation. So Australia's Prime Minister Scott Morrison said that he very much separates the issues of sport and the issues that are between two governments. But given this recent diplomatic boycott, is that realistically possible?
So joining us for his thoughts on this, we now turn to James Dorsey, the Senior Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. And thank you for joining us, James. Now, what do you make of this news of the US boycotting the Games from a diplomatic perspective? Does it do more harm than good, especially in the sporting arena?
Well, I don't know if it does more harm or good in terms of sports, because let's face it, international sports associations, as well as, of course, particularly autocratic countries that host mega sporting events, like to tell you that sports and politics are separate. Fact of the matter is, sports and politics are joined at the hip. They're like Siamese twins. They're inseparable. And that is, quote, just simply a fact of life. Now, in terms of the boycott, it's not unexpected. In fact, I think most people would have anticipated this. It will have an effect, obviously, on Chinese-U.S. relations or Chinese relations with those countries that boycott the Olympic Games. Some of those, for example, New Zealand has tried to couch the fact that it's not sending diplomats to the Games in China as a consequence of travel restrictions as a result of the COVID pandemic. That's obviously a thin veil. But nonetheless, I don't think it's going to have an effect on the sports or on the Olympics itself.
Right. So, you know, Australia, UK, Canada, now you've also mentioned New Zealand, they kind of hopped onto the bandwagon. Who do you think else will follow suit?
Well, I don't know that they hopped onto the bandwagon. I think that these are all, these are countries that often act together and find common ground. I also think that Canada has a troubled history, recent history with China, certainly when it comes to human rights. Two of its nationals were held in Chinese prison and convicted in court because of the Huawei case with the detention at the request of the United States of the vice president of Huawei. Australia obviously is at loggerheads with China. So I don't think it's following the bandwagon. Each of them had their own reasons, and there's some common thinking here. We'll have to see. I mean, the big question, of course, is what are the Europeans going to do? And that's unclear, obviously, since the Europeans are trying to some degree, on the one hand, coordinate with the United States, but on the other hand, chart their own course. I don't think that you're going to see a lot of countries in Africa and Asia, maybe with the exception of India, following suit.
Yeah, James, the boycott, it relates to the Winter Olympics and not the Summer Olympics, which, you know, some might say is perhaps less important and therefore less in terms of repercussions. But I think it also masks the fact that the US and China are going through a trade war with military, with a possible military conflagration and ASEAN being center stage. Could the Winter Olympics and the Uyghurs, you know, pose a bit of a cat's paw in terms of the real meaning, the real repercussions behind this trade between this event?
No, look, I don't think that this fundamentally changes the balance or upsets the apple cart. Relations between China and the United States are strained. In all probability, the Chinese expected this move. And if they didn't, they were being incautious, if you wish. So I don't think that this, I mean, this is clearly a statement. It's a symbolic move. It focuses attention on all kinds of areas where China has abused human rights, first and foremost in Xinjiang with the Turkic Muslims, but also in Hong Kong and elsewhere. I don't think it does anything more fundamental than that.
Well, bearing in mind that China, you know, didn't attend COP26 in Glasgow, you know, just basically another episode in terms of these schoolyard tactics. And does it ratchet a bit higher in terms of the pressure between the East and the West here, James?
Well, it obviously doesn't reduce it. I don't know that it substantially worsens relations that were already bad. I mean, on the issue of Chinese participation in the COP26 in Glasgow in Scotland recently, in some ways, it was China that harmed itself more than any other thing. China is one of the greatest emitters of carbon emissions. It wants a multilateral approach to world problems, including climate change. So this was obviously a place they not only should have been, but they had a responsibility to be, and they were not.
And if we shift topic to, you know, the real sports topic on Peng Shui, you know, this Chinese tennis star that I think, you know, posted on Weibo this whole allegations of having an affair with a senior China communist official. What we've seen is that the IOC has been pretty tepid in its response, whereas the sports associations have taken a much more muscular approach, right, towards its welfare of athletes. Do you see that trend happening that, you know, these governmental multinational bodies just can't, you know, manage the welfare compared to the sports associations?
It's an interesting question. First of all, I think what this the IOC position does, and it starkly contrasts with that of the Women's Tennis Association, what it does is, going back to the beginning of this conversation, it reinforces the fact that politics and sports are interlinked. Just look at the composition of the International Olympic Committee. Government is written all over that committee. What I think you're seeing is an interesting move or development, and we have to wait and see where that goes. So you've had the Women's Tennis Association, which has canceled tournaments and matches in China because of the Peng case. You've had the recent statement on LGBT rights by Lewis Hamilton at the F1, both in Qatar and in Saudi Arabia, and presumably again shortly with the next F1 race in Abu Dhabi. You have criticism by the Danish national football team, which has said that it will put a protest about human rights in Qatar on its jerseys as it trains for the World Cup. You've seen Bayern München, the German football club, that has a sponsorship agreement with Qatar, fans standing up for human rights in Qatar. So the question really is whether or not this gets enough momentum sports associations to have to change their attitude.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much for your time, James. That was James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. One gets the impression that sports is the victim and diplomatic relations are the victim where, you know, these global political conflagrations are concerned.
It's a victim because it's being used as a political tool.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.